And greetings. Thank you so much for joining us today. This is Ellen Kamai, the natural nurse, right here with you for the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. And we're always live on Tuesday, 10 to 11 a.m. But if that's not a time that's a good listening time for you, no matter, because we are there 24/7 on the archives. And the best place to go to contact us is naturalnurse.com. And if you go to naturalnurse.com and click on the bottom of the page where it says join mailing list, all you have to do is use your email to join our mailing list, which has, 100,000 people or more. So very easy thing to join. We don't send out too much information. We don't fill up your inbox. We send out a little bit now and then. And a lot of it is online that you can check yourself without being on the email list, that you just go to naturalnurse.com, and we have so many things available. For instance, let's say you're a health professional and you'd like to switch to doing all natural. Well, then we have a class called Career Paths in Natural Health. Let's say you're an individual who would just like to take a class in natural health. Well, then you can go to Natural Nurse Academy, and there is a course catalog there. Those classes are available for anyone. But if you are a healthcare provider with a license, you also can get CE credits for it. So you can take it just for information, or you can take it for credits. If you go over to our media tag, you will find presentations, links to archives of thousands of radio shows and podcasts, all free, as well as videos, articles, and all kinds of other information. We love to point out our classes and events tag because that's where you can see how you can join with us in person, either in person live on a video class or in person on the ground walking through the woods and learning to gather wild, edible, and medicinal plants and make them into medicine. So we have several coming up, and we actually have an ongoing four-class series called the Natural Nurse Herbal Certification Course. That gives 18 CEUs for health professionals, or you can take it if you're not a health professional, just because you want to become knowledgeable in herbal medicine. And that's a four-class series, but if you miss some of the beginning classes, you can take them on the archive and then catch up with us. We still have a class coming up May 7th and also June 4th, where you have to actually go out and, again, learn about herbs and make a little bit of herbal medicine, as well as learning the definitions and what you should know about possible side effects. By the way, herbs are all natural, but they are not all safe. So a very important thing to learn. And we have wild, edible, and medicinal plant identification classes coming up. One is on June 10th, which feels like around the corner right now that we're in April. And that is on Long Island and Old Beth Page at the beautiful, beautiful Restoration Farm. And that class usually fills up. And interesting that people fly in to attend that. We also have our late spring, which is June 11th, Chinatown Herb Walk in Chinatown. That's in Chinatown, New York City. And we learn all about Chinese herbal medicine. '23 Herbal Medicine Making Workshop. And that will be at Restoration Farms. And we have lots of other classes coming up. So just look at naturalnurse.com classes and events, and you will find them. And then you can find all the videos, and we have a YouTube channel, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So we're on Instagram. On Instagram, we have over 20,000 people that are on the Instagram thing. So a lot's going on. Just go to naturalnurse.com, I would say, to start out. And then from there, there are links to, all those other Instagram accounts, et cetera, as well as so many, many pieces of information that are free for you, as well as classes that are free. And then you can also you know, join us for those things that, may have a fee that gives you something back, such as CE units and, of course, knowledge. Some people want to become a registered herbalist. Registered herbalist is another class that we teach and put you through the process. We act as a mentor to help you go through the process of becoming an herbalist. And as always, right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, we have wonderful guests for you to listen to every week. And today, our guest is Jenny T. And she has a beautiful company called Sipping Streams Tea Company. And she's got a lovely website as well, sippingstreams.com. I'll be looking at it during our show today. And Jenny was born in Hong Kong and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska. And she is the founder and owner of Sipping Streams Tea Company, and also the author of a best-selling book called The Essence of Tea. Jenny hosts the Essence of Tea podcast, and Sipping Streams Tea Company started an experimental tea farm in Alaska using geothermal heat. Also, the company has won several North American tea championships and global tea championships, and they have been featured in Fresh Cup magazine, Edible Alaska, and NPR. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jenny.
Thank you for having me.
What a fabulous story. Let's go back in time. And you were born in Hong Kong. When did you start living in Fairbanks, Alaska?
So I came to Alaska actually when I was a baby. I was probably like a month and a half. And it was December. I think my mom said it was like 40 below. And it was quite the shocker. But
well, let me just throw out, what made your parents choose Alaska? If you're coming to the United States, you know, there's Florida too, you know.
Yeah, my dad already lived here in Alaska as a chef. So he was already established here, managing a bunch of the restaurants during the Alaska pipeline days of when it was being built. And then when he went home on vacation, that's how he met my mom. So yeah, it was the first time my mom and I came to Alaska was after I was born.
Great story. So yeah, Alaska's, you know, freezing cold and there's a lot of challenges, but people I know who live there love it.
Oh yeah, I love living here. I mean, I did leave home to go to college, but then I moved back. So obviously I must love it enough to come back to it.
Well, one thing you shared with us last time we spoke is that although your company is Sipping Streams Tea Company, you actually started off being a coffee drinker, not a tea drinker.
Oh, yeah. When I was about four, my sister was like, oh, you should drink that mystery drink that's sitting on the RV bumper that dad drinks all the time, because he would leave his cup there, like on the weekend. He'd be out doing yard work and he put this cup there. So I started drinking it and I love the flavor of coffee. I remember my grandmother, when they would come to Alaska every other summer or something like that, when I was a kid, they would bring See's candy and she always brought the coffee candy flavored one. And I love that candy too. So just like straight up coffee. I mean, I like the flavor of it. So, yeah.
So then you were surprised. As life happens, and what maneuvered you to be even at all interested in tea?
Well, like most college students who have student loans, when your loans are going to have to be repaid, you start thinking about your spending, like when you're about to have to pay it back.
You know what? I have to jump in there. I think a lot of students don't ever think about that. I think that's really mature of you to have thought about that in your college years, which is why, why you're such an excellent businesswoman today.
Well, so yeah. So I was studying athletic training and physical education. So I was a double major in college, and my last year of college, I went to the coffee shop every day and my drink was $5.28. And I was thinking, man, this is very expensive. I'm going to have to pay this all back. Like, I live like as if I have disposable income, which I don't, because it's called student loans. And so I'm gonna have to pay it back. What's the cheapest thing on the menu? Oh, tea. Okay. I'll buy a cup of tea. And that's kind of how it started.
So that's interesting. So it had to do with price, because if you just buy a cup of tea, especially in a dispensary, you're usually just getting one of these commercial tea bags and a plastic cup or something, styrofoam in those days.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was literally because of that, but because of my friends who would walk by, see me drinking tea because, it has a tag. So the difference of coffee and tea is coffee doesn't have a tag usually hanging out of it, right? It's not a tea bag. But for the tea, it would have a tag and people would say, "Oh, are you drinking tea because you're an athletic trainer? Are you drinking tea because you're Chinese? Oh, I heard tea cures cancer." And they'd tell me all these different things just because they saw my cup with a tea bag tag hanging out of it. And I had no clue. I because I didn't grow up as a tea drinker. So
So
it's
let me just ask you that cultural question. Is that true, or is it not actually a true thing that Chinese people tend to drink tea more because it's culturally ingrained?
I think it's not just culturally ingrained, but China and India are usually neck and neck as the largest exporter of tea. So globally. So when you're producing pretty much the world's supply of tea or in competition of it, like everyone's drinking it. Tea is just everywhere, whether you live in the big cities or you live in the rural villages. And tea does originally come from China. So, there is something to that being culturally, Chinese. But I didn't know that until I started
That
studying more for
didn't
tea.
apply to you, right?
Yeah.
So it was just, something people said, oh, maybe that's why. But they were surprised because drinking coffee at that college community was like more widely done than drinking tea.
Yeah.
So that's a great story of how you started on your tea journey.
Yeah.
And that then, what did that lead to in terms of it becoming? I mean, it's a long way from getting a cup of tea in college to owning a major company and running a beautiful website that people can look at called Sipping Streams. I mean, what made this interest move forward into such a big part of your self-identity and professional life?
So part of it has to do with people's questions that they had. And also being an education major is that us who are teachers always have this way of thinking that if someone asks you a question, you want to kind of find out. Maybe it's like the service-oriented part. And so just because I don't know something doesn't mean I'm not going to go try to find out the answer. And when I was a high school teacher, it was the same thing too. I'd always tell my kids, like, don't worry, I don't know everything, but I'll try my hardest to find out. So, while these people were telling me different things, like, oh, I heard tea cures cancer. Oh, I heard it's healthy for you. I didn't think that tea was healthy for me. It just never really occurred. And while I was in the library, researching about different case studies on rehabilitation techniques, electrode modalities, or whatever for physical therapy, I would actually come across case studies on tea, like research on tea. And one of the very first studies that I found was on Scandinavian men who were about age like 55 to 65 years old, and it showed a correlation of less likelihood to be in accidents, less likely to have cardiovascular incidences, less likely to die of stroke. And it was a very general, case study. It wasn't going to tell you that it helped cure cancer or fight heart disease necessarily. It was just the lifestyle of the individual who was a regular tea drinker that drank tea 3 times a day. I thought that was very interesting. So that was one of the very first case studies that I paid attention to because it did not have to do with an Asian woman my age, like post college or anything like that. But it to me, I think it made a huge impact because it spoke to me about the lifestyle of what it means to be a tea drinker. move on forward. I'm back in Fairbanks, Alaska, and I'm working at a physical therapy clinic. Same thing happens. I'm drinking styrofoam cup, right, with a Lipton tea bag or whatever it was that was at the clinic. And I'm just drinking tea because that's what I'm just deciding to do. It's like, I'm not drinking coffee. I'm just drinking tea. Not that I know much about it. But again, the conversations with my patients while I'm walking around and doing therapy on different patients, they would start asking me questions or they would tell me their own personal stories about tea. A lot of them were military because where the clinic was very close to a military base. So a lot of my my clients and patients were military, and they would tell me about living down in the South, living in Georgia, living in, you know, Alabama, having sun tea, having iced tea. And they would start telling me their stories about tea. So now I'm meeting other people who've had tea when they were a kid, when they'd have special memories of when they were a child. And I just kept thinking, like, man, I don't have stories like that. I didn't grow up as a tea drinker, but every time I drink tea, somebody's telling me a story about their life. And this is very fascinating. So that started rolling into influencing me and thinking about, what does it mean to be a tea drinker? What is this interesting connectiveness that the fact that you drink tea, someone who also drinks tea or had drank tea, it's almost like a secret society. Like, oh, you're a tea drinker too? Oh, this is what I used to have when I was a kid. I didn't say anything. I wasn't a tea drinker. I was just starting to drink tea, but like it signaled this like secret message, like, ooh, tell me about your past with tea. And I just kept feeling this and having this experience over and over again when I became a high school teacher. And pretty soon all these people were telling me, you should start a tea company. There's no tea businesses here. And I was shocked because I had no interest in owning a business. I was doing my careers. Then I was a high school teacher, and the high school wanted me to teach a semester-long class on tea, design a whole semester curriculum on tea. And so I just kept building up my repertoire and researching about tea, learning about the history of tea, the trade of tea. And slowly it came to the point where one summer I was going to visit, like, my baby step, right? I was taking a baby step, and during during summer vacation, I decided to travel to China to visit tea farms, just because I'm like, well, if this tea business thing ever takes off, I should probably go, I mean, find out as much as I can about tea and go to the source. I should go to China. So as I was handing my airplane ticket to the customer service agent to get on the jetway, I was on the phone with one of the parents at the school, because it was a very tiny private school. And it was a co-op, actually, kind of almost like homeschoolers, but there was two teachers. I taught all the math and science and PE class, and there was another teacher who taught all the humanities, art, history, English classes. And they told me there was not enough kids coming back the next year, so I wasn't going to have a job. And so really, the whole tea business thing, like, just fell on my lap. I'm like, I guess I'm doing tea since I'm getting on a plane to China.
That's kind of like a perfect story, like a storm, let's say, of incidences that came together and led you on a very specific path.
Yeah, I mean, not everyone has crazy stories like that. And I'm a person who thinks about and plans about my future, you know, like maybe not so far ahead in the future, but it's kind of like, oh wow, when I come back, I don't have a job. Well, okay, I guess that's what's happening.
And that tea thing was, you know, like organically, let's say, growing.
Oh yeah. I mean, just how it happened and how it influenced me. It's very interesting because when I reflect now on, you know, my upbringing, so my tea company.
Well,
wait,
let's go into the trip to China. What happened during that time?
So when I went to China, I went there and I had an interpreter. So I'm born in Hong Kong, so I speak Cantonese. I don't speak Mandarin. And so I have an interpreter. And it's kind of funny because he's a tall white male, you know, 6 feet tall. I'm 4'9". I'm tiny, petite. And so I could understand some things he said in Mandarin, but I couldn't speak back. So when he was talking to the different tea farmers for me, I could understand a little bit of the side conversations he was having with them. So they would look at me and go, "She looks like she's Chinese." And he would say, "She's from Alaska." And they would say, "Oh, that's so interesting. They look like they're Chinese." And I just kind of sat there understanding that I couldn't really say anything on my own because it was very confusing for them to hear that I was born in Hong Kong, but I don't speak Chinese. But it's because I couldn't speak Mandarin. And it was very interesting and humbling because in a way I had to have the assistance of somebody else to help me with negotiations. But at the same time, since I'm mostly listening instead of speaking, I could understand what was going on as far as like the business world went on. Like I could listen for and observe if there was like inconsistencies, anything that I wanted to see, like at the tea farm. I mean, it was like eye-opening because, like I said, I didn't know anything about the tea industry. I found out that they do not ever want children to be working in a tea farm because they will ruin the fine quality teas. It's also against the law because they should be in school. So there's like no child labor issues. But they have a lot of pride in high quality teas. And usually the older women are picking them because they're much more skilled, have a lot more experience in picking high end teas. So it was very nice because I got to one of the first places I stayed at was an all organic tea farm. And even the food like was like free range chicken that were like running around the tea farm that they would have for food or vegetables that they grew there. And then people could live close by the tea farm because these are like hundreds of acres, right? So, and they're on hills and people don't live necessarily at the tea farm. Some of them live close by or they kind of have like a dormitory. If their home was like too far away, and everyone was very like happy. And I'm not saying this because, you know, I was there, but I was observing a distance to see like the consistency of how people were treated or acted like, if that makes sense. Like, I don't want a show to be given to me like, oh, this is a great, wonderful tea farm.
Because yeah, that's a fascinating story. Now, I want you to hold on to that. And we will continue. But right now, we're just going to go to our segment called The Natural Medicine Chest. And we are talking today with Jenny Su, that's T-S-E, and her company is Sipping Streams Tea Company. You can find it at sippingstreams.com. We're going to continue our discussion of your exploration of the organic and other than organic Chinese tea farms, and of course, your own business. And also, we'll discuss that free class that you have coming up this month called 5 Days of Tea that I guess any of our listeners could actually sign up for as well. It looks beautiful. So we will be right back with more right here on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z.
So I was saying, when I went to visit in China, it was very interesting because not only was I learning about international business, cross-cultural communication and negotiations, but at the same time, I was going back to my roots, essentially. So some of the very first places that I went to go visit were a location where my father was actually born, which I did not know where he was born. Their family had fled during the Japanese invasion. And it was a very hard upbringing for my father. So both my mother and father, they didn't have a lot growing up. And so when we had moved to Alaska, one of the faux pas was they did not want to talk about their childhood and the hard times with their childhood. So going to China, it just happened, again, it just happened that I was going to the province where he was born. And that was very enlightening.
So it's just that particular tea farm was, that is so interesting, was in your dad's original province where he was born.
Yeah.
And you didn't plan on that. That's amazing.
Exactly. And so, again, being pulled more to my roots, like, who am I? You know, yes, I'm from Hong Kong. I was born in Fairbanks, Alaska. What does that mean? What does that mean to be culturally Chinese? Okay, maybe I might not be culturally Chinese, but where am I from? And what is the legacy that I am moving into. Where did I come from? Because by then, my grandfather had already passed away when I started visiting tea farms in China. And he had long passed away. And I was starting to think about, what does it mean to drink tea? And did my family really drink tea before? Well, my mother drank mostly hot water. My dad mostly drank coffee. But my grandparents did drink tea every morning. I just didn't realize that's what it was. So as I'm visiting different places in China, they all do this Chinese tea ceremony. And you can call it a tea ceremony, but really it's just a way of making tea. It's a ritual of having tea, welcoming guests to have tea. Except when I was a kid, my grandparents just had it for themselves. They didn't invite us. We were very, very young. And so I started thinking about it. I'm like, oh, my family did drink tea. Well, my grandparents did. And they had it every morning after they did the weird Chinese exercise thing in the living room, which turned out to be Tai Chi. So there were a lot of things when I was younger that I didn't understand what was going on, but there were different cultural Chinese things that happened in our house almost every day. And so the more that I'm just visiting China, and yes, it was on business to learn more about tea, how to buy tea, how to source teas, it was more of me discovering where I came from and who I was and how I've become who I am today and my family's, you know, legacy for the future generations.
So wasn't that interesting that that faith just took you there? It seems like this is your specific kind of dharmic path.
Yeah, it's very, very fascinating. And I did get to go to Guangzhou, and I have a family friend who lives there, and I got to learn about the pu'er trading there. So pu'er is the fifth type of tea. So the five types of tea that there are from the Camellia sinensis plant. So we're not talking about chamomile or peppermint. We're talking very specifically this evergreen tree called Camellia sinensis that turns into white tea, green tea, oolong tea, black tea, and pu'er.
Many people don't know that, but that's absolutely true. It's all the same plant that's referred to as those various kinds of teas, depending on, and you can explain this for it, how it's picked and processed.
Exactly, how it's picked and processed. And pu'er is the fifth type of tea that ages like a wine, that increases in value. And it kind of has this musty, earthy flavor. It's actually aged in like caves. When I say caves, it's kind of like, you know, like a wine cellar or like a cheese cellar, you know, how people age things. It's not like this underground strange hole in the ground or anything. But and it has this earthy kind of flavor because it goes through this extra process after it's been dried that it gets kind of like re-wetted or encouraged to be kind of like a little musty, a little composted kind of. And then has microbes in it that are in suspended animation because of this environment that you have these leaves go through. Now they're dry, but they're kind of like, it was something that was actually created accidentally hundreds of years ago as this tea was being transported from Yunnan, China, all the way to the emperor as tribute tea. And then one year, one of the emperors in power at the time was like, this is the most amazing tea under heaven. And so that's how it became so popular. But at the time when I had visited China, it happened to be, I would hear, like, again, remember, I'm listening. I can't speak, you know, my Chinese, my Cantonese, my Mandarin isn't very good. And I'm dealing with business people. So I definitely don't have the vocabulary for business terminology. But what I can understand is that a lot of people in the big cities are on the phone buying and trading pu'er like crazy. Now, this was in like 2007. And so I was thinking to myself, why are so many people going after pu'er like crazy? And shortly after, that's when us in the tea industry who've been around for a while heard about that there was a bunch of counterfeits found about that year. So people who weren't really educated in tea didn't know what they were investing in, and they weren't actually authentic pu'er cakes. So anyways, I just remember sitting in these really fancy cars and people would be on the phone as I was being transported around or shown around because of my different connections. And I'm like, wow, they're like trading thousands of dollars, like buying up poor cakes. Are they tea drinkers? Like, do they like tea that much? Because for me, I'm just thinking, oh, it's for like personal consumption. Well, who would buy thousands of dollars if they're not in the tea business? And they're trading them like stocks. And yeah, shortly after that, that's when I remember listening to like the international news about all these fake poor cakes that were out in the market. I'm like, ooh, that's very interesting. So very early on in my tea business journey, it was kind of eye-opening to just be more of an observer, to understand, like, I'm not like caught up in this trade and looking for fast money to be made in tea. I'm just literally just trying to learn about the tea industry. So that was one of the, another pretty impactful thing was, you know, there are fakes that are out there. And then I went to this other tea farm and it was definitely struggling. And my interpreter said, oh yeah, he says, the gentleman says his tea isn't very pretty. So since most people don't want his tea, he's turning it into a mango farm because that is what people want and he can make more money selling mangoes. And I did see his tea and his tea was not very pretty and it was kind of dirty. And you would think like, okay, well, tea's natural, yes. But, you know, you can have tea that's like handled in a really clean way.
What's the difference between natural and organic?
So all tea is like harvested, mostly hand harvested. There's also a lot of machine harvesting. So it's grown, you know, outside, except for my tea farm that's geothermal in a greenhouse, but it's grown outside normally, usually away from industrial places, just because that's where you're going to have the acreage, the open land. And it's picked and then it's dried and withered. But some places do spray pesticides, which is very interesting because usually it's in a place that if you're going to have a lot of pests, it's in a place that the tea plant isn't going to succeed at naturally anyways, if that makes sense. Like if you think about hundreds and thousands of acres of land, that's a really large area to control for pests, right?
Right.
So if you're going to be spraying
pests, you're saying they don't tend to spray that much anyway with that plant.
Correct. But if it's a place that the tea plants, like a climate that it doesn't really succeed naturally anyways, it's probably going to have more issues with growing, with you know, different molds, with pests. It just doesn't do well there in that climate. So, you know, going way, way far out, you would see that the tea plants would do much better than a place that was like closer to an industrial area. And so this guy's tea farm was very, very tiny. And, you know, he was trying to make a living at it, wasn't doing well. Again, needs to pay the bills just like any farmer. So he's changing it to a mango farm. I went into his factory. Most of these places dry their tea leaves with coal heat. And because that's what they have. And so, you know, it was like on this floor, not this floor, but this room. I just remember it being very dirty and kind of dark. And he was a very nice man, very, very nice man. But he was very honest too. And most tea farmers that I met were very honest. It was those middlemen, those brokers in between that are making a lot of money who are like reselling the tea. But usually the tea farms were like, this is what I have and this is what I'm selling it for. And they'd be pretty honest with everything. Like you could see everything. And so, I bought some of his tea and I was like, oh, it tastes okay. I mean, just like more as a tourist. So I bought some of his tea because I, you know, took up his time and visited his place. And I was like, so there is a difference in the quality of the tea and how clean it is, right? Because it's dried tea leaves. Sometimes they're withered and rolled depending on what type of tea it is, if it's green tea or an oolong tea or a black tea. And with that, your factory, your production area needs to be clean because like it's kind of open air, you know, like outside with like a shelter, kind of like in a barn is like how you would make your tea because you need a lot of space to produce the tea. And so, yeah, it was very interesting going to places that were very successful and places that weren't successful because at the heart of it, they want to be as honest as possible and they do want to be successful, but you have to naturally be able to be successful. If your tea farm doesn't make very good tea and the tea plants don't really want to grow in that area, you should probably switch to another crop. It's kind of like, you know, farming even in the US. In Alaska, certain plants don't grow here like all year round. And so you have to figure out what's going to be the most successful. You know, we're not going to grow cantaloupe in Alaska, not unless it's in a greenhouse. that's year round heated or something like that.
So those are really, really interesting things. Now, what we're going to do is take a little break right here. And then when we come back, I'd love to talk about your geothermal experiment and also definitely the classes that you teach at sippingtea.com. So we're going to take a little break right here for Station ID. You'll learn about our wonderful producer right here, which is PRN.LIVE, and PRN stands for Progressive Radio Network. We will be right back with more. Well, the Natural Nurse and Dr. Z, I'm Ellen Kamai, the Natural Nurse. You can find us at naturalnurse.com, and we're so happy to get so many emails and whatever those things are, tweets and all that stuff from all of you listeners. And today we're talking with Jenny T from sippingstreams.com. If you visit her website, it's beautifully done, really well designed. And you offer classes. So welcome back to the Natural Nurse and Dr. C, Jenny.
Hi. Thank you so much.
Before we run out of time, we still have some time to go, but I wanted to allow you time to talk about the classes because I saw one that's coming up. It looks like you actually do it live, and it's a class about tea. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I have coming up very shortly. I believe it's, yeah, in a couple, is it next week?
I know, like days.
Yeah. Actually, it is next Monday that it starts. Right. It's a live class. It's absolutely free. And I do teach paid classes, but this one is a free class. I probably only offer them like 3 times a year. So this will be my second one. And it's called The 5 Days of Tea. It's all about the history of tea, where tea is grown, fun things you can do with tea, the health benefits of different teas or herbal infusions. And it just really dives deeper into what tea actually is and how it's so powerful, how it's a powerful medium. But it's absolutely free. It's all online and virtual. I started doing these free virtual classes around COVID just because, you know, people were home and that way you could access it. But I do teach it live. And if you can't attend the live sessions, my classes are always done around what the attendees are interested in. So what that means is if you cannot attend it live because you're working at that time, then you can submit to me your questions, your responses, your questions, comments to those sessions, and I make sure that I address them right away on the next live session. So it's kind of a way to have immediate feedback on what you're interested in or more clarification about what I'm talking about. And it's for only about like half an hour to 40 minutes each day, Monday through Friday, starting April 17th. If you go to sippingstreams.com, you'll get a link to go sign up on our tea classes page, and you get a free workbook. You even get a one-on-one free session with me to make sure that we're tailoring this class to your specific needs and desires.
And it's so cute. And the name of that segment of your website is called University. That is really creative, really creative. I just love everything about your website, and you know, you're selling really good quality tea. In the time that's left, let's talk a little bit about your experimentation with growing tea in Alaska, which is not necessarily a tea growing friendly place, using geothermal heat. That's amazing.
Yeah, actually, I just did a field trip out there with a whole bunch of homeschool kids. Once a week, I go out there, which it's about 60 miles outside of Fairbanks at a place called Chena Hot Springs Resort. I know the owner, so he lets me use a section in one of his high tunnel greenhouses. He's known here for he's the first geothermal power plant in the state, and he's about to build a second one on one of the Aleutian Islands. I'm sure you could look it up online in the news, and he'll be extracting on the Aleutian Islands steam from a volcano. That power plant's already being built. This place has a very low heat, like low temperature hot spring, which powers the geothermal power plant. But not just that, this greenhouse is not hydroponic. So he's mostly famous for his hydroponic greenhouses. And this was his first greenhouse. So it was experimental, like years ago, where it's grown like outside on the dirt. And there's pipes that run underneath the ground to keep it from freezing. So when I approached him, Bernie Carl is his name, I asked if I could use one of his greenhouses that I had worked in when I was a high school teacher. We actually went there for spring break working in this specific greenhouse, just volunteering and learning about greenhouses and sustainability in Alaska. So, because I had that experience when I was a high school teacher, I knew this was probably one of the only places I could grow tea year round because it's a tree and it cannot handle sub-zero temperatures. So since it's a tree, it needs to be in the ground and in the soil, but this soil is also not frozen because of the pipes that have the hot springs water flowing underneath it. And then he recycles and uses like reuses everything that he can. So he has old retired pipeline fins that are used for the sides of the Alaska pipeline that radiate heat during along the pipeline in Alaska. There's these fins that regulate the temperature of the ground, so permafrost, so there aren't parts of the ground sinking. We have this thing called permafrost that is like semi-permanently frozen ground. And so sometimes when there's warming or climate change, then there are places in Alaska that will just sink into the ground, like a sinkhole, because before it was like a patch of ice. Anyways, he reuses these things to use as fins to radiate heat in the greenhouse. And then he has these blowing fans. And so we've had the tea farm for 2 years now. I had the kids, I met them yesterday at the tea farm, and we picked a bunch of tea leaves. But it is a very small patch, and I go and I pick the leaves every week. Right now, it's past spring equinox, so there's tons of sunlight happening, and so they like to bolt. They like to grow a lot. They love natural sunlight. And one thing that I learned the hard way is that there A is a dormancy period that tea trees need, and then B, there is a humidity requirement. So for us in this greenhouse, since it's very warm all year round, in the wintertime, it's very hard to cool it down other than to turn down the rate of the water circulating through these fins. So one of the hardest things is to keep it like at refrigeration temperature during its dormancy period, which we didn't realize the first year that there was
Because
a dormancy.
otherwise the plants can die, right? It's too
Yeah.
cool.
And they need to rest, essentially. And the other thing is having enough humidity. So in Fairbanks, where it's usually, 25% humidity, it's pretty dry here. This past fall, we decided to build these pond foggers. If you're a mushroom grower, you might know what I'm talking about, but it's like this plastic tote that we built that has this thing that creates humidity, a lot of humidity. And we have a controller to make sure that it hits about 60, 65% humidity. It wants to be very humid. The leaves don't like to dry out. And if you're not going to water them all the time, then this greenhouse is perfect, especially in the wintertime, because it's enclosed and keeps the humidity in. Other than we struggle with heat, so like excess heat in the wintertime.
Right. So
So,
that's true with so many farmers. Getting that balance is the challenge.
yeah. So we've learned a lot of things the hard way, and this is why I now go visit it every week and just make sure all the the water's flowing correctly. And so the water and the electricity and the heat is all completely sustainable because the electricity for the grow lights in the wintertime, now we don't need any grow lights. We have a lot of sunlight. But in the wintertime, where it can be almost like zero sunlight here around December 21st, you know, we need grow lights. And
so this tea that you're growing is experimentally with geothermal. That's not mm-hmm. necessarily all the tea that you're selling. You're doing
correct
that sort of an educational activity.
Mm-hmm. And we are making tea and we're hand rolling it. So as the tea plants are going to need about 5 years to fill out, to like grow like a larger, like more branches and more bushier and have more leaf production, that's when we're going to be able to sell like more and more of it. But right now, we just make the tea leaves for ourselves and for special events.
And how does it taste? Because I'm sure you're actually a connoisseur of tea, and not all tea is the same. It becomes, you know, a very complex taste structure.
Yeah, I have actually been very shocked by the ugly tea that I've made. Like my very first batch of tea leaves was very, very ugly. And I didn't really know what I was doing because it was my first batch that I made. And I was shocked on how rich it tasted. And I think it has to do with the minerals in the water from the hot springs. So again, the water is being watered from the water that's there locally. And I was kind of shocked that it tasted so, it kind of reminded me of like a wuyi oolong from China, where it has this irony mineral flavor because of that mountain. Well, because of this water source, I'm thinking it must be how it has this slight minerally richness taste to it, but also very smooth and creamy feeling, which is usually a really high quality tea. Like there's these tiny micro little hairs on the tea leaves that make it thick and viscous and smooth feeling in your mouth, like thick feeling. And I was also shocked to find that it was high quality tea because like the second or third time tasted better than the first time. So the teas that I've made so far, I can re-steep them easily up to four times. And that's usually a really good quality tea, is you want to be able to get stronger flavors the second or third time that you re-steep them.
Well, very, very interesting. I want to thank you so much for being our guest today on The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Tell us where people can find out more and what's going on with you.
Yeah, you can go to my website at sippingstreams.com. I also have the Essence of Tea podcast that you can follow and subscribe. And then I also have a YouTube channel with a bunch of information about tea and what we're doing, videos of our tea farm also. There's a PBS documentary about our tea farm on our YouTube channel also. And that's youtube.com/@sippingstreams.
Well, thank you so much. And thank you, listeners, for joining us once again for another edition of The Natural Nurse and Dr. Z. Until next time, please visit us at naturalnurse.com. And I hope that you stay healthy.